Ishmael Johnson, inviting you to listen to the Coon Round. Welcome to the Coon Round Report, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, and I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. This week, we will be talking about violence in America with Dr. Mungo, Jamal Asalam, and In Our Gangs Are People Too section with Lee Shaw. We will continue our discussion about the relationship between gangs and their economic conditions in our community. Now, I'm delighted to have with us in the studio Dr. Mungo, Jamal Asalam, Lee Shaw, and my co-host, Earlene Anthony. With the shooting in Aurora, Colorado still fresh in our minds, tonight on the Coon Round Report, we're going to have a roundtable discussion about violence in America. And in the second part of our show, we will discuss how the economic conditions in our community contribute to the violence in the community. We will also discuss some solutions. Dr. Mungo, Jamal, and Lee, welcome to the Coon Round Report.
Thank you very much, Ishmael.
Now, first of all, I would like to get your comments and reaction to the shooting in Aurora, Colorado. Let's start with you, Dr. Mungo.
Well, of course, it's a tragic when we see violence such as took place in Aurora, Colorado. My heart goes out to all the victims and their families. Of course, it's violence, to me, it seems to be an inherent in human nature, global violence, institutional violence, namely, and police violence, you know, like the violence of that took place in Fullerton, the violence that has taken place in Anaheim, and violence that takes place on a daily basis that we don't really address that type of violence because it's not like that Columbine or that Aurora where dozens of people are killed at one time. But when we look at police violence, you know, it's the same thing. But it's not maybe one here, one there, two here, two there. But when such violence happens, like in Columbine and Aurora, where there's a dozen or more people wounded, our attention is drawn to it. Like I say, violence is an inherent part of our nature, human nature. And I really don't know what the definition of violence would be. I look at it as intentional harm or damage to someone. And I don't think any animal in nature does intentional harm or damage. Most other animals, they kill for survival or for et cetera. Mm-hmm. You know.
Mm-hmm. Great reason.
Okay. Jamal, what's
your... I'd like to add, you know, my family lives in Aurora, Colorado. And I spoke to my sister, and she lives down the street from the gunman and from the theater. And it was, you know, I was real curious if any of my relatives was there that night, because they could be. And fortunately, they weren't. Again, this is, it devastates Colorado because, and Aurora, Colorado is really a beautiful place. The mall is the hub of community for that city. And it's just, you know, it devastates them because of the way Columbine was executed and the way this is executed. Not only do you have the violence happening in the theater, you also have it happening at their house. You know, they wanted to sabotage booby trap or otherwise ignite something outside of the things that they actually committed. In Columbine's case, they had... charges all around the school that they discovered that weren't exploded, and the same with this guy's Mr. Holmes' house being booby-trapped as well. What kind of mind does that? What was he thinking about, you know, other than really trying to hurt and maim people?
Mm-hmm. How about you, Lee? Your comments.
Mm. Well, the violence is the last stage of anything, so he had to have noticed or realized something, you know, because people lie a lot. You know, like color, he, to me, he mentioned color mind. People say things, and they build you up so high, and then you find they done lied to you, you know? Mm-hmm. And your only outlet is just let them know, you know, because there's no other way of letting them know except just to start killing things, whether it be dogs, cats, or whatever. You know, you just go crazy. And that's what I believe that happened to him. Because he was too intelligent as far as the book study, as for academics. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But something had to trigger it.
Something made him snap.
Yeah, something made him snap. And most of the time, if you ever want to make a person mad, lie to him. And you'll find out it gets real rough from that point on. Mm-hmm. You know? And so, just like anywhere else, you know, you could be in South Central or New York or Chicago. When people begin to tell you all kinds of old crazy things and put you off here, put you off there, you know, even though it don't, sometimes it don't even relate to you. It's just the idea that you can feel some compassion for the people that they did lie to, right? And then you go off.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Earlene.
Well, we were talking earlier, and I was saying a lot of times we may miss clues. And, you know, we look back later and think, oh, well, this happened or that happened. And it's like we can see the same people every day, day in and day out, month after month and whatever. And, for example, if you see me day after day after day, and I'm just consistent doing the same thing, but then on a day, you see me doing something, you know, that's kind of out of place, you know, you should kind of take notice, because I was just thinking, now he had all these weapons, you know, how could he have gotten all these weapons into his place where he stay and nobody saw anything or thought anything, you know, and all the ammo and all this other stuff that he had, you know, I'm sure people look, you know, hindsight now and think, oh, yeah, well, you know, this happened or that happened. But, you know, it's too late. You know, I think if you see somebody that's doing something that's just not their normal everyday stuff, you know, you should, you know, take notice. You know, it's better to overreact than underreact, because I think, you know, some of these tragedies and killings and some of these things can just be prevented.
Okay.
That's my point.
I'd like to add one more mm-hmm. thing. Exactly right. And many times people don't have a regard for life.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing happened in Colorado that a lot of people didn't realize, but during the 4th of July, they had a free concert, and somebody just pulled out a gun and started shooting randomly into the crowd there. So you people have already been gun shy. You know, we know that in any given time when you're in a public place, somebody might pull out a gun mm-hmm. and start shooting randomly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's the scary part. But like you said, we should pay attention mm-hmm. to what people's reactions are going
yeah.
to be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I was also like to add something else to that. You know, we don't know what connections this guy really had. It's a possibility. You know, there's conspiracy theories, you know, that, hey, how can a guy do this, get into a theater, carry arms such, I mean, you know, of course, there were Batman rises, mm-hmm. so people there with playing the Joker and Bram, you know, all these characters, Two-Face. But it seems to me like the police are never around when
That's
these
right.
things happen.
Always
you
after the
know,
fact.
They come maybe 5 or 10, 15 minutes late. And so you wonder, you know, they claim that this guy had a blank look on his face when appeared in court today or after this. I mean, here's a guy who had body armor on. He had where he had his chest protected, his head protected, his ankles protected. I mean, like, he was, you know, all these weapons, like, he was ready to shoot it out. But yet, he was the only one shooting. Yeah, he didn't.
No one paid him any attention.
Yeah, he was in the parking lot, so they say, passively, like, waiting
to be arrested.
I mean, this is a, you know, basically, America is an amazing place because even though with the guns rights and everything that they're talking about, concealed weapons that you can carry, people don't walk around with guns. People talk, you know, people argue, you know, even. But they don't pull out a gun and shoot each other. And then even if you have a concealed weapon, do you have the bullets loaded into it? Do you have the safety on or off? It's totally a surprise.
Well, let me ask this. Let's get into this. Let's talk about the access to guns and weapons. Do you see that as a problem, something they have to look at close in terms of how easy it is to get weapons and ammunition and often can get your hand on a little small nuclear weapon or something?
Well, you can get your hands on money. A zip gun. You can build your own zip gun. I mean, they do that in your tank and everything else.
I believe everyone should have a weapon. Mm-hmm. Everyone. If everyone had a weapon, then...
You could defend yourself.
You know, to defend themselves, then it would be somewhat difficult for someone just to...
Okay, I want to come back to that in a minute. Lee.
Yeah, I was thinking about a situation that... I was kind of familiar with. In 1989, there was a guy who came from Orange County, and he was on his way back to Whittier. And this guy had a van, and inside his van he had two or three AK-47s, five or six shotguns, 9mm, right? But what got me was he also had these detonators. And I got something. What was up? You know, the first thing that came to my mind, this guy finna blow up something, right? And he was at this courthouse down here, county courthouse, I believe, not criminal court, but the other one, right? And he stayed in the jail from when he was talking about the time, you know, to give him credit for the time. He stayed in the jail about almost about 9 months, you know. So they gave him time served and probation, right? And I found that kind of strange. Not because he had... First of all, AK-47s was outlawed then, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But what are you doing with detonators, right? Mm-hmm. And how does a guy go to jail for 6 months just having a little pistol with no bullets in it? And this guy got detonators, right? And he get a year. Mm-hmm. And finally, it's real strange that our society condones terrorism at the same time telling the people, right, that we got to protect this country from bastard, you know, this mass destruction type thing, these all this nuclear weapons. When right here in this country, in this city, people are doing the same exact things, ready to blow up something.
Now, let's go back to what Dr. Mongo just said. I want to pick up on that. He said that he told what would help solve the problem is that, if everybody... would have weapons?
Yeah. Well, you know, back during the Civil Rights era, when the Klans were coming into black neighborhoods, threatening, you know, intimidating people, and then the deacons of
defense.
Remember those people?
Deacons
and they said,
defense.
We're going to arm ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then that form of violence lessened against the black community. There was a time when blacks weren't allowed to have firing ranges, or what would you call it? You know, where you go and learn how to shoot and stuff. You know, and then in Ohio, for a fact, when blacks first started to open up firing ranges for blacks to come in and learn how to shoot and stuff, they wanted to pass some law against that.
Mm-hmm. And then also, if you keep in mind that, you know, the country, because of the history of slavery, you know, the history of this country, what the black soldiers had to go through for a long time, like World War One, World War Two, one of the biggest threats that they had, one of the biggest fears that they had in their mind, is that they didn't know how the African American soldiers would react when they get their hands on these weapons and then start thinking about the history. Oh, they did all of this. It's time to get some
payback.
Yeah. And even though I think that was the farthest thing from the minds of African American, because I tell people all the time, one of the things that our parents, they never taught us to hate anyone, the slave masters, they didn't teach hate. That's what kind of made us a little bit different. But let's get back into these talk about the assets of weapons and stuff like that. Well, let's talk about this next question I got over here. Why is there so much violence in America? Let's talk about that for a while. And we know that violence is all over, going over in the war zones, Iraq, Afghanistan. But right now, let's concentrate on why you think it's so much violence in America. Who wants to start off with?
Okay, I think we're addicted to violence due to what we view on television primarily.
The media. We'll get to that in a minute.
You know. Mm-hmm. What we see in our movies. You know, I came up during a time where Westerns, you know, was the genre, and war movies.
Gunsmoke.
Gunsmoke and Tombstone and Iwo Jima, you know, because we had come out of
World War II.
Wars. So this is what Hollywood fed us. Hollywood has been, the gangster movies, Pay or Die, you know, with Ernest Borgnine. God bless him.
Ernest Borgnine.
You know, so... Yeah, you know, we've been conditioned to.
So you think the movies had a lot to the media? Okay, anybody else want to pick up on it? Why so much violence in America?
Well, I think Malcolm said it best. It's just chickens coming home to roost. You know, put so much violence out there towards people in America and people around the world. Now you're getting a taste of your own, right? In your infrastructure. See, you do people bad and you expect things not to go to 360. But whatever you do, whether it be good or bad, it's coming back to get you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just live long enough, it's coming around in a circle. That circle coming around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever your hands put out, that's what your hands going to get back.
Amen.
Jamal.
Well, the statistical fact is that the violence has gone down. In the last 20 years, there's fewer murders, violent crimes in America than there was 20 years ago.
Yes, that's true.
Okay. So... We are living in a peacefuler time, and like you're saying, definitely the community has, you know, to defend themselves against, you know, all kinds of different kinds of things. But actually, violence has gone down in America.
Yes,
so again, we focus in immediately because something has happened.
Okay.
And we want to know what that is.
Lee.
The violence is going down in America. That's a fact. But the living factor, right? The poverty has risen,
absolutely,
right? Which brings on frustration
and the threat of violence.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So when you get frustrated with something, you know you got the beat on the table, and when you got a pistol in your hand, it gives you the power to get even.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay.
This Los Angeles is a prime example. The two riots that have happened, one 10 years away from another 20 years away from another, is a reaction to, like you were saying, frustrated people. When people are frustrated, hungry, can't get food for their family, unemployed, have nothing to do. France had riots for 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
Come on. So, I mean, it can happen anywhere.
Okay.
I think that's what we have to really look at. What is that violence, and how is it really affecting us?
How about Earlene, you want to comment on that, the violence in America?
Well, I really believe a lot of it comes from the media, too. You're probably going to ask this later, deal with this later. But a lot of it comes from the violence on television. When you turn on that television, you're seeing who got shot, who got killed last night, police chases, and
hundreds of murders.
All right. Mm-hmm. All this is going on the news media. And if there's a car crash, people want to see the blood and guts, you know, the looky-loos and all this. All this you can turn on and just pull it up on a daily basis, and, you know, it's there on the news. Mm-hmm. And also, a lot of it go along with the fear factor. The media is telling you, well, we got to fear this today. We got to fear this. The stock market is down, so mm-hmm. we got to fear it. And all this fear and all this is going on. So it's like, you know, people look at this on a daily basis. Of course, you probably want to go out there and shoot up somebody. And you get mm-hmm. fired on your job. You know, you hear about people going back and shooting up some stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it happens.
Just like Mr. Irwin was saying.
They made it a term.
See, and it just dawned on me that even the little kids are vulnerable to this thing because mm-hmm. they got those little video games. And what they do with the little video games, mm-hmm. they always shooting at somebody. Mm-hmm. And if I keep shooting on this thing right here, one day I might just want to see what it really feels like, mm-hmm. you know, just to go out and shoot somebody.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Okay.
You know, but the news wouldn't be news if it showed all the good things.
They never show anything
place.
Good.
Right.
But if you begin to dwell on the positive rather than the negative, right, then you'll get somewhere.
Okay, let me ask this question. How much do you think the fact that the country was conceived almost in violence in terms of to develop the United States, had to take the land from the Native Americans, and at the same time, they had to use slaves to help develop the New World, which in itself is violent concept, you know, slavery and what's happening with the, and what happened with the Native Americans to take the land from them. How much you think that contributed to the violent nature of what we see in America? Who wanted to start off with that?
Well, you know what, every country is taken over violently. You know, the United States isn't the only, you know, country
the first
predicated country. Upon, you know, mm-hmm. violence coming in here, oppressing or the Native Americans. Or, you know, every country uses, I don't know of any country where there's been a peaceful takeover. You know, you look at the Aztecs, the Incas, the, you know, et cetera. And it's, you know, of course, it has an effect. You know, it depends on what you do afterwards. How you treat the people, you know, afterwards. You know, do you give them justice or do you continue oppressing them? Or do you educate them? Or do you eliminate the violent treatment that, you know, the takeover was predicated upon, or, you know, mm-hmm. what, so, you know, of course, America has a dirty history, but most people have a dirty history, you know, like the Mexicans try and say that Mexico is theirs. It's not theirs. The Spanish ruled them for a while.
The Portuguese in South America, and the French in Canada. We can go around the world, Russia, China. Japan, all these cultures, India, Africa, all these cultures have demonstrated or carried some type of violence in order to make that happen for their society.
Let me ask.
But most of them, most of those particular mm-hmm. people did not care for world dominance, though. They didn't go into war for world dominance.
No. Oh yeah.
They didn't go in. They didn't send ships across the water or back and forth with them little sails on them to go conquer something over somewhere else. They was always in their own little place.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. This America thing. Right. They came from one place here, enslaved after they seen the riches and, you know, the wealth here. Then they began to come. Then they enslaved the Indians. The Indians couldn't deal with the rigorous slavery and this kind of weather. So what do? They go back and they get the African people and bring them here.
But see, what you got to realize, too, that when America came into prominence or Britain came into prominence, you got to go back to the time of Alexander the Great or prior to that. They didn't know that the world was as huge. They didn't know the resources of other countries. You know, they just thought that what they conquered was the world, you know, the world in total. You know, and then start exploring, you find out, oh, man, there's a lot more out there than this.
One more point, Ishmael. I know you got some great things to say, and everything, the direction that you're going in is so positive. So the American Civil War is one of the bloodiest wars known in the history of man.
In America.
Mm-hmm. And that is also part of what we live responsible.
Now, okay, let me ask this. How much do you think the fact that, okay, America is supposed to be a melting pot, this is what they shooting for, the melting pot. How much do you think the different ethnic groups in America fighting for upward mobility create tension and violence?
Dion.
Yeah, of course. This is what Tony Brown brings up in $300 billion in Black. Even though they have conflicts within the groups get together and flip over their money 8 times with each other. You know, I mean that means for the 5 of us that are sitting here in the studio and 3 more people, I pass a dollar to Miss Erlene, she passes it to you, and Lee gets it from Ishmael, and Lee passes it on to Dr. Mongo, and 3 more times it flips over in our community so that we create the wealth.
Yeah.
But is that happening? That seemed to be happening everywhere but the African-American community.
Because
one of the most unique things about the African-American community is it's one of the very few communities in which they don't control the resources within the community, where you have outside forces that's actually controlling the means of production, the buying and the selling, et cetera, like that. I don't think there's any other community like that. And I would somebody like to comment on that? Why do you think most African-American community allow others to come from the outside and set up business?
We've been conditioned and taught to be consumers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to buy a Cadillac. We want to buy a Rolls Royce. We want to buy Stacey Adams shoes. We want to buy Michael Jordan, this and that. We've been conditioned to be consumers instead of what would be producers. The opposite of
innovators.
Producers
of wealth.
And, I wanted to mention something we talked about earlier. Marcus Garvey said, we must begin to think for ourselves and do for ourselves, a new way of doing things, right? But we have not yet begun to think for ourselves, therefore we always going to remain consumers.
Mm-hmm.
When the doors open for us to go through, we get lackadaisical and we don't step in there. One of the instances that we talked about earlier, too, was this NAFTA thing. It opened the doors for what Marcus Garvey was trying to do in the early 1900s, right? Where we can get in there and get in the marketplace. But we, like Mr. Mongo said, we've been conditioned to just deal inside the United States and not the world, right? Internationally. So when the door opened up,
We weren't ready.
We weren't ready to do it.
We weren't ready. My cousin did the same thing. He wanted to invest in oil. Idea, not with the Saudis, but with the Nigerians, and he ran into obstacles every step of the way.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Look, I want to go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go into. Let's talk about domestic violence for a while. You know, they're going within the different households and the threat of domestic violence. And how that is related to the economic system. Well, let's get your thoughts on domestic violence, the reason for domestic violence, a lot of domestic violence that we have in the community. You want to start off, Earl, on that?
Wow.
Especially women. Well, women and children both have been.
Yeah, we have to realize a lot of time in the household, the black male is not working. He doesn't have a job or income contributing to the household. And many times the wife has an education, and she's out there working and bringing in the money. And I'm sure this causes a lot of tension and a lot of problems, because the man probably feel less than a man because he's been taught to, say, bring home the bacon and support the household. And I'm sure, you know, this causes a lot of tension, and he gets frustrated, and, you know, he may start off with a little tap, but, you know, them taps can maybe get a little harder and harder. So we have to, you know, look at it from the male's point of view, too, because he's been taught and raised that he should support his household. And, you know, many times he feels less than he's doing this.
Dr. Munger, you want to say something on that? Domestic violence.
Well, speaking about, you know, if we're talking about black violence.
Well, I think domestic violence is something that crosses
the
spectrum.
Well, you know, slavery taught us to have no respect for our mothers, our fathers, our sisters, our brothers, you know, because during slavery, a son could whip his mother, a son could whip his father, you know, et cetera, and et cetera. So I think this has become something that has been instilled or ingrained in us as a people, where we don't respect our parents. And I mean, you know, this is generalization. Right. We don't respect our parents. We don't respect our elders, and we don't respect our siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay,
I would say that.
Jamal, you want to say something on domestic violence?
Well, it's exactly that. 100 years ago, women weren't free. They were treated as property. We as African American people were treated as property. And we were beaten as property. It's domestic violence. What do you do if you see your neighbor beating on his wife? Do you intervene? Do you report it? Do you call 911?
Well, answer that question for you. If you just say you.
If it was me?
Yeah.
If I can't negotiate, which I think everything is negotiable, if we can't come to some agreement or terms, then obviously you have to intervene in some kind of way.
You know, in a little while, after we come back from our community calendar, we're going to talk a little about the anti-violence situation, coping groups.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things, how to dramatize those situations and come up with solutions so the community members would know how to answer that question, what
exactly
they're supposed to do.
Well, it's just the same thing Dr. Mungo and I have talked before. Less than 50 years ago, when I was growing up, a gay person or a homosexual person was beat.
Yes.
And even in recent times, they've been found dead or, been killed by various means. Again, we're talking about how come the violence, why?
Okay.
I think that, Lee, just quickly, especially in a male-female relationship, each party has an obligation, right? And you can't invade other people's space as far as like, okay, you know I'm saying? The man is the king of the castle. Well, that may be the popular say, but actually that castle belonged to that woman.
Mm-hmm.
And her position in the thing is to keep that castle nice and tidy and nice and comfy. So when you come in from making that little bit of money, she makes a nice place for you to your solitude there. When you want to run everything, you're going to get frustrated because she's trying to let you know, or he's trying, whatever, whichever way it go, you know, that you're trying to control everything.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're going to go with this popular belief. You know what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying?
That, well, let me also point out something. You know, one of the things that happened in the African-American community, because of the way the education system was laid out for the first African-Americans, we got a chance to get an education. We know, first of all, these was the mulattoes, who were the children of the slave master and the black lady. These are the ones that laid the foundations for the 114 black schools that we have in existence today. And then over a period of time, especially now, especially after Brown versus the Board of Education that broke down desegregation in 1954, mm-hmm. it seems that, you know, the government, they wanted to create a situation where they could kill two birds with one stone. They created an opening for not only just a female, but the black female, being black and female, they had an opportunity for the black female to get an education more so than the black male, because they could kill two birds with one stone. Not only was she a minority, but she was a female also. And then this trend created in the household that we have today, where you have a situation where you might have a nuclear family where the female might be the breadwinner. She's the one to have the degree. She got the master's degree, and they in love. Right. She had a master's degree. She making $40,000, $50,000 a year. Brother sitting in the household, he making $850 an hour. You know, how? One of the things that we got to figure out is how do you deal with that economic situation right there to make it work. You want to say something, Doctor?
Yeah, you know, what I would like to say at this point, see, the Caucasian, or however you put him, his thing has always been based on patriarchal society, where with a more natural native people, matriarchal societies is all, as far as I'm concerned. See, and what we've done, we've taken on this here European culture or whatever culture we look at and you know, they say, hey, you've got to be a man because this is a man's world. You know, James Brown said that. Mm-hmm. But I've always believed in the matriarchal society because this is the fruit of the family. So we've been taught to be, hey, I'm a man, and you know, when we should get away from that entirely, mm-hmm. because most of us really now, we respect our mothers more than we do our fathers, because usually our fathers are in jail or mm-hmm. our fathers are mm-hmm. killed.
You know, okay. Mm-hmm. Let me go to one more thing I want to deal with before we go to community calendar. One more little quick issue. I want to deal with some legal violence that we have out here in our society and how this affects the overall society. And I'm talking about like football and like boxing. You know, that's violence, but it's sanctioned, legal sanctioned violence. Do you think that contributes to the old? You mentioned games, these little violent games, games and stuff that they have. I see so many youngsters just consumed with playing. Quickly, let's get a couple of comments on the effect of legal violence like boxing and like football.
Modern day gladiators.
Yeah. Do it contribute to the violence and overall society?
Yes.
And the acceptance of violence?
You'll find people who, especially in boxing, they get out there and they mimic some. It's like, let's use Muhammad Ali, for instance. Right? Great, great fighter. One of the greatest. He is the greatest. People mimic him, right, in their techniques, right? It just on the street even, they do the same thing. It's, you know, it creates a competitive type thing, but it gets real violent at times. You know, I had a cousin like that. He was doing the same thing until the guy he was hitting on messed around and hit him hard and knocked him down.
Okay. Look, let's go to our community calendar. Let's take a break for our community calendar, and then we'll come back with our Gangs, Our People 2 section, and also talk about some solutions to violence in America.
This is the community calendar for the end of July and the beginning of August. Every Tuesday from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m., Melvin Ishmael Johnson is teaching a Veterans Community Workshop. class is still open for registration. And if you're interested, please contact him as soon as possible. The workshop is currently working on a stage play called Surviving the Nickel. And this play will be performed at the Vortex on Sunday, August the 26th. And the workshop location is the Vortex, 2341 East Olympic Boulevard. This is at the corner of Santa Fe and Olympic. And if you're traveling by the Metro bus, the number 60 and 66 stops at the corner. If you need more information on the workshop, give Melvin a call at 323-850-4436. On Sunday, August the 5th, from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m., Drama Stage Qumran and Breakthrough is presenting a writer's forum entitled Write Your Own Story. Some of the topics will include fictional writing, nonfiction, poetry, playwriting, and much, much more. There will also be guest instructors on hand to assist in the session, along with the featured guest panelists, and much, much more. This is a free event, and all are welcome to attend. The location of this event is The Exchange, 114 West 5th Street, Los Angeles. And more information on this, please call 323-850-4436. And on Thursday, August the 5th, from 1 p.m. to 10 p.m., Drama Stage Qumran will be at The Exchange, and The Exchange is located at 114 West 5th Street. Drama Stage Qumran will be hosting the Arts Walk, and we will have art exhibits from the Veterans Works, Veterans Art, and exhibit also pictures from the recent stand down, and Peace Art from the USC United University Church. It's called Peace Kids, Peace Art. And also live music, guests, open mic, local spoken word artists, and much, much more. And for more information on the Arts Walk, you can call 323-850-4436. And this is a reminder, if you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. And once again, our call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Hey, thank you, Earlene Anthony. We're back with the Qumran Report. You can call in live to our show at 800-893-9562. Today in our Gangs Are People Too section, we're going to continue our discussion about the economic conditions in our community, relationship to violence and gangs, with Lee Shaw, one of the co-producers of this segment. He's an actor and community activist and also the stage manager for Drama Stage Qumran. Now, Lee, last week we talked about the relationship between economic conditions and violence where gangs reside. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, like I said before, you know, no one is willing to come into these communities and do anything because of so much violence. You know, and the business is not set out to lose anything, right? So they stay away. What we have to do is to make these neighborhoods into communities, make them vibrant again. And the only way, well, let me say this first. Living in a multicultural neighborhood, everybody in the neighborhood is not going to agree with you changing things around, right? But you have to be able to go forward anyway. So as a person don't, if they want to stay as a neighborhood, most people want to stay as a neighborhood because they're able to do what they want to do. You know what I'm saying? Stay separated from everybody else. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that, he said, a white man is successful at what he does, right? And he makes no excuses for his mistakes.
Mm.
Right? He said, look at him. Study him. Right? He lives in communities. And in his community, he's able to do things as a community. Right? that you can't do in a neighborhood. Because, and the reason why is because he owns, collectively, they own their community.
Together.
They say what comes in, what doesn't come in. You know, so we have to do the same things. I have no qualms with that right there. Mm-hmm. Right? Because I'm going to study everybody. If it works for you, it might work for me too.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But there are people who don't want to do that because they got their own agenda.
Now, let me point out, and maybe this is something that you could touch on, Earlene. They have what Los Angeles County has been trying to do for a while. They have what you call neighborhood councils.
Yeah.
Do you think that over a period of time, we should really look at that close and start getting them to start thinking in terms of community councils? What do you think, Emily? Because you're a member of the neighborhood council.
Well, right. I'm a member of the MacArthur Park Neighborhood Council. And we do try to regulate things that are going on in the community. And we do have a little say-so over what come into the community.
Exactly.
Because some of the medical distributors wanted to come in, and they wanted us to support them by giving them a letter of recommendation. But we said no. We didn't agree with them coming in because actually it was a little close to a school.
Mm-hmm.
So the neighborhood councils do have a little regulation over what come in and what doesn't come in as far as going in, having neighborhood, well, at neighbor communities, did you say?
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that. But the neighborhood councils, they work pretty good for the neighborhoods.
Okay. Look, let me, what I want to do now, because I want to have a little time for us to have some comments, closing comments. I want to talk about solutions that Drama Stage Qumran is working on, and it's called the Anti-Violence Situation Coping Groups. And I want to read, the goal of this group is to put violent and potential violent situations under a microscope and examine the components of these situations in details with the aim of coming up with alternate solutions before the situation escalate into violence. A form must be created in which the participants in violence and potential violent situation can present, examine, and devise solutions to potential violent situations before they escalate into violence. The basic formation of the anti-violence situation coping group is that of a circle. Inside of the circle would be a 360-degree playing area where the situations would be improvised, utilizing the dramatic concept of improvisation. And then the last thing is what we hope to do with Drama Stage. We hope to train anti-violence situation coping group leaders who can go out into the community and show community leaders and other caring community members how to set up anti-violence situation coping group. So enough is enough. We must stop the violence now. And this is one of the things that we plan to pursue. We want to be able to set up these groups in the community and train community members how to set up these anti-violence situation coping group. Go ahead.
We love the idea. I do. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, again, Ishmael, you call it just right. It is important for the community to be able to identify themselves as a community and exactly. also to deal with the components and things that make up violence. One of the things I'm going to observe real quick is Audubon Junior High School in Lemur Park was a place in which there was kids going crazy. I mean, police officers were walking down the halls and teachers couldn't even teach. When I got to the campus and was able to initiate a small things with OLPC, I found out that a lot of the kids would say, "There goes my uncle, there goes my cousin," driving by in Escalades and Big Money and all that, and they were involved with gangs.
Mm-hmm.
Gangs only lead to two ways, either death or incarceration.
Okay. Now, let me say this real quick, because we wind it down. I'm going to give everybody a closing comment in a minute. But
can I get to read a poem?
Yes. That's what I want to get to now. Before we get to our closing comments, we have two great performing artists in the house, Dr. Mongo and Jamal As-Salam, the in-house poet. Now, they're going to perform some of their works. We're going to start with Jamal and then Dr. Mongo, and then we're going to come to closing comments.
I have a poem that is brand new. I just wrote it last night. It's called, it's dealing with Occupy. Occupy 2012. The first finale, reasons fine-tuned, atlas, watch out for mugging. And freedom is fully loaded, 6,000 rounds swept under the rug at Batman Rising. And if Occupy is a revolution, what are the demands? With no demands, it's time to disband. And we should extend a hand and prepare for a new stand, set our collective mind with a new plan, which does not include massive zeros, gone global, utopian social, like glasses of champagne overflowing with taxation without representation. I bet you 10 grand Obamacare will not pay for my medical marijuana. And as we mark time to find the terrorist crime has moved the world to its knees, and social networking has pushed kings and queens out the way for the people's freedom. We must go back and can't go back behind the curtain, the second finale. In a civil world breathing the free, fresh air, the smoke chokeholds our fears, and the fury takes a back seat to power. Zoom in on the ivory towers, the victim's life really sucks. Behind the Occupy is the Green Lady, and she holds a torch.
Yeah. All right. Next, we got Dr. Mongo.
Okay, since time is running out, I would like to give just a few lines of a poem I wrote almost 35 years ago. But thank you very much, Ishmael, for having me here. And for the listeners, I am Dr. Mongo. Look for me in cracks and crevices. Miniature atomic sparks traversing energetic enigmas. Look for me in dark canyons, caves, catacombs, and chasms. I thrive in volcanic sputum, dank dungeons, cyclones, faults, full moon, seismic orgasms, and concealed faults. I am nature's patient therapist. Bring me neurotics, psychotics, schizoids, paranoids, catatonics, hebephrenics, and I will explore ambiguities woven in subconscious fabric. Quilt spin the mishmash of polarized intellect, weld pinch circuits, inflate muscular blowouts, reconstruct sensory atrophy. I am Dr. Mongo, wasting no time on regrets, pursuing cherished ideals. Yet look for me in gutters, alleys, sewers, gutters, and ravines. Catch my wind, inhale my breath, emit my gas, meet yourself.
Dr. Mongo. Okay, now we got a little time. Let's take about a minute each and do a little closing comments over here. Let's start with Lee and then move to Earlene.
Yes, as far as gangs of people, too, you know, I believe that an anti-violence situation coping group would work fine in there. That would be the first place to start with changing neighborhoods and community, because in there you say community about four times. We never said community, a neighborhood anti-violence situation coping group. Mm-hmm. It brings the people together for a solution. This is the only way you're going to be able to conquer anything. You got to conquer it as a whole. Mm-hmm. In a place up there called, next to Carmel, California up there, they have the same things going on up there. To buy a house up there, I don't care who you are and how much money you got. You're going to have to meet the community and have to be approved by the community before you can get anything up there. Mm-hmm. See, you got to be able to keep the things that you don't need in your community out. You don't want no germs up in there. You want that guy standing at the front, you know, he had a old castle, that man be standing in front of the front door with the big old axe looking thing. That's what you have to have in your community.
Okay.
You know?
Earlene.
Well, We've really had a great conversation here tonight, and I'm thankful for my guests, Lee, Dr. Mungo, and Jamal, of course, the host, Melvin. But we just want to keep these conversations going, and it's really great when we can come together and have, like, the round tables and talk about issues that are really important and hopefully come up with some solutions.
Hey, Jamal.
Very much so. Your solution, your anti-violence pamphlet, as well as the things that you're reading and talking about, is very important for Los Angeles. I love Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I've grown to appreciate all the aspects of it, and I think it's a great community, and it can become an even better one.
Okay.
Okay, you know, I'm a romanticist and an idealist, and what I would like to see young people doing is competing to see who can beautify their neighborhoods
the best.
That's right. You know, do that type of
activity,
and be rewarded on those bases as being rather than being awarded on what type of jacket or shoes you wear or buy.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And I would just like to mention that I think it's a good time. And I see more people doing it, too. We're mostly during Dr. King's holiday when they began to study his life and the concept of nonviolence. But I think that we're going to have to start studying the concept of Dr. King 360-some days, 12 months a year. Okay, I would like to extend a special thanks to our in-studio guests, Dr. Mungo, Jamal Al-Salam, Lee Shaw, and my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Please check out our past shows of the Qumran Report on iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, skidrow.la, and dramastage-qumran.org. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. And from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. And I would just like to send out a special prayer for the families of those that lost loved ones in the shooting over the over the weekend. Thank you very much and have a good evening.
And thank you, Ishmael. Thank you for having us.
Double amen.
Glad to be here.
Give us a call. Let us know you're out there listening.
Into the Atomo podcast every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Pacific time at skidrowstudios.com.
Atomo. You're listening to skidrowstudios.com. This is Keith Coogan. Tune into the call sheet Saturday nights, 8 to 9 p.m., and I promise to sound like I'm always on Quaaludes.
Tune into The Love Bite, where all your kinky desires come true, Sundays, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time at skidrowstudios.com.
Hello, this is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, inviting you to listen to the Qumran Report, Monday at 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific time.